And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles Football Craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they said, we're moving it to Rosario.
Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Awful drives forward. Awful scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it is the Massive Report podcast brought to you by our incredible friends at the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street. It's a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. OldNorthArcade.com. Hit it up. We are back recording in our normal, recording live once again, just recording all in different parts of Columbus and elsewhere because we've got a special guest joining us. A little teaser there for you guys. That's a term from the biz as well, Ralph Schudel, where we've got a very enthusiastic Ralph behind the boards for us tonight. Ralph, how you doing, sir?
I'm ready. It's a good day. It's a beautiful day to have a day.
All right. Also with us, we have Alex Stanek. Sir, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm just trying to still process Ralph's previous statement. Try to figure out what he was
saying.
Beautiful
day
that.
To have a day? Do we get that?
This Ralph, is Richard Suttle-esque word salad I'm hearing here. It's just, you know, really not acceptable.
It's a great day to have a day. So, and
Sam
poison pills and stuff.
Is also with us. Sam, do you have an explanation? Can you decode it?
Well, you know, it's a great day to be on the pitch, and I'm actually kind of proud of myself. I knew what pitch meant.
Oh, there we go. Another Suttle-esque statement. Love it.
Is that offside? That's offside.
Ooh. We will have to talk about offside a little bit coming up, but
unlike Jairo Arrieta, I'm not born offside.
Oh, Jairo. I miss that guy. I mean, not really at all, especially. But offside. Maybe we could say the crew were the beneficiaries of that. We got some discussing to do, so offside will be back in the conversation. But joining us for this podcast, we're bringing in our legal expert, our counsel, if you will, the official Massive Report counsel, Colin Johnson, who's going to be joining us to talk crew and everything else, and then also some of the developments going on down in Austin and soon to come to a courtroom room near you in the Franklin County Common Pleas Court. Colin, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. It's a nice day in Milwaukee, and hopefully my dog is quiet long enough for me to talk with you guys.
Oh, yeah, good call. Well, as you can see, Massive Report, we are truly a massive, you know, podcast spanning all throughout the Midwest, bringing you the most thoughtful and insightful commentary on the Columbus crew. So anyway, crew did good this weekend, right, guys?
Yeah.
That would have been good for the
for like six, 4 minutes. The rest of the 82 were terrible, but
yeah,
86.
They got the points. If not for the result, it was one of those games. I feel like this 1-0 victory over Houston that. You know, yeah, thank God for that goal, because otherwise that would have been an utterly forgettable game, would it, Ralph?
Yeah, let's break it down a little bit here. You know, so crew welcome in Houston Dynamo to Mapfre on Saturday night for the first and only home game in the month of August. Isn't that lovely, guys? Join me if you've heard that before already once this year. But, Houston came in hurting. They were down three players due to red cards that they got in their match the previous weekend, as well as manager Wilmer Cabrera was not available because he was suspended for actions that were deemed, I believe, violent conduct in the tunnel at halftime. So, you know, you had a very shorthanded Houston Dynamo Club, as well as they played a very lengthy U.S. Open Cup game on Wednesday against the Fight in Los Angeles United FC, FCs of the greater Will Ferrells and stuff like that. But, you know, yeah, for a large portion of the match, you know, we all were there for the most part, with the exception of Colin. Sorry, Colin. But, you know, you had Houston looked very weak on offense. I can think of, you know, Andrew Winger was very number 11 for Houston, was very lackadaisical. They were putting crosses way wide. I think one cross completely was shanked to the point that it, you know, went completely off the guy's boot and, you know, cleared like almost in a straight line. So, you know, Houston did not look game at all to win this, you know, which made it all the more frustrating for Crew SC, because Columbus really just, the chances were there. They played pretty well, but they just couldn't convert. They always had, you know, they were almost playing down to the level of Houston, to the point where fans were kind of getting a little bit frustrated throughout the course of the game. The first half ended at a scoreless deadlock. It started to get a little bit more testy towards the second half. You had a potential PK call go uncalled from Mark Geiger, and he was very controversial, as always. Some fans love him, some fans hate him.
Oh, Mark Geiger.
But
World Cup referee, Mark
World
Geiger.
Cup referee, Mark Geiger.
Who loves Mark Geiger? Who are
no
these
one.
Fans who love Mark
Geiger? Patrick's mother doesn't love Mark Geiger.
Patrick Goldan, actually, we've had a discussion about this, actually likes Mark Geiger and respects Mark Geiger to an extent. So
that's why he wouldn't come on tonight.
That's been a discussion that him and I have had, actually, off air before. But he respects his decision-making and stuff of that sort. And, you know, I think a couple of those key plays, Geiger got the 50-50 ball right on Higuain, I think, in the middle of the pitch. I'm going to defend him. I think that was a good call. The penalty kick, the potential penalty kick, I actually have two frames. Sam and I were standing in relatively close proximity of one another on Saturday, where we have two frames. And, it, you know, from what we had, the photographs seem to suggest that, you know, Giassi got clipped a little bit, but refs are human. They miss calls. You know, if we only had a system that would, you know, was put in place to eliminate any, you know, clear and obvious error. But I digress. In the 90th minute plus the first minute of stoppage time, Crew SC mount a very nice attack, in which a very controversial moment by some Houston fans, as the ball is played in and Patrick Mullins is in an offside position. However, Patrick Mullins does not impact the play. Giassi Zardes is in an onside position and beats the goalkeeper Willis to his right-hand side. And Crew SC run away at the death with the goal in the 91st minute. Not as exciting as the Will Trapp cannon screamer against Orlando City, but equally very cool. Justin Miram returns back in the 60-something minute. I don't know. I lost my notes. They're all shuffled on my desk here. Justin Miram returns. Let's talk about it, guys. What do you guys think? Let's have some fun.
I'll jump in here real quick if you don't mind. I was watching on TV all the way from Wisconsin. It definitely looked to me like Zardes took a huge dive on that the penalty. I don't know if the photos say otherwise, but I thought he was fortunate not to pick up a yellow there. I don't know. That was kind of what struck me the most about that play. The other one, though, he was, you know, the offsides was a tough decision, but it looked like he was level, right? I think we've seen a few different angles, and I've got hopefully something coming tomorrow morning that's going to talk a little bit about how it looked a lot like Zardes was level and Mullins didn't touch the ball. So it's hard to say there was a clear and obvious error that would need that video review.
A lot of people, Colin, I see what you're saying, is they're talking about that it was almost kind of a dummy by Mullins to kind of make the defender bite. And, you know, it was just kind of one of those weird gray areas in the game where he's, you know, if he's making a play on the ball, did it actually, you know, affect the outcome? Did defenders kind of go to him, and maybe that held Giassi onside? You know, it's one of those things that, you know, if it happens to anybody else in the league, it's just, you know, it's another day in the office. But if it happens to Crew SC, it's a big, you know, ask the Orlando City fans. It's a big conspiracy.
I still love the fact that Orlando is in conspiracy mode. I'm sure. Do we have time to talk about Orlando later on in the podcast?
Oh, sure.
I would just like to cover the dumpster fire that is Orlando
City.
This
is fine.
But going back to the game, you know, I thought that the Crew looked okay. I mean, I don't think they were amazing, but they got the job done. You know, end of the day, they, you know, basically wore out that Houston team, created some opportunities, and got one. So I'll take the 3 points. Do I think that they deserve a win? I mean, maybe. They obviously were not looking their best, but, you know, you just kind of move on to the next game and count your blessings. The weird thing about MLS is that, you know, any team can win basically any game. And all these things kind of balance out in the end. It's important for teams to just kind of understand that things will just balance out in the end, and not freak out and claim that Don Garber is purposely trying to screw your team over and that you need to boycott MLS forever until they disband pro and we just have a bunch of, you know, rec league referees.
That's what I don't get with
gap.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of fun.
What's your alternative?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, who else do you want? You want to go down to, like, you know, Sports Ohio and grab the dudes from there and be like, okay, you're a Major League Soccer referee now. Because I don't think that will end well for
you. Because
that's
already how they do it.
Yeah, I really don't think that's going to be a great plan. Do you want them to spend a bunch of money to import referees from other countries? I mean, I don't know what the game plan is there, but you would have to check with a certain Walt Disney World Football Club fan base to get more information on that. But yeah, I think in general, you take the points, you move on, but you should, I think that the Crew have to kind of look at what happened there and try to make some changes, because I don't think that beats an Atlanta team. And as we start inching closer and closer to the playoffs, you're going to start wanting to get these guys in top form and be performing at a level that's going to see you through to the end kind of stages of that knockout session, or whatever you want to call it, the playoff system that we have.
And that's where I think that it's concerning, where you look at this and, you know, a game like this, obviously it's thrilling to get that stoppage time win. And just like it was last week, but you're also looking at these, I mean, Crew right now, they have a goal differential on the season. You remember how good this team was defensively through, like, the first, you know, quarter of the season, maybe. They are now just a +2. So basically +2, thanks to those last two game-winning goals each week, really living on the margins. You look at, they've got just 31 goals scored this season. That is tied for the second, just the East itself. Only four teams with positive goal differentials. And obviously that's really top loaded from the Atlanta and the Red Bulls. But then you look at the goals for, everyone in the East is outscored the Crew. But Montreal, who are, you know, in the playoffs by virtue, they're having to be six positions, because otherwise, I mean, no one really looks at that right now and sees them as a playoff caliber team. So a lot of still red flags for me. Even as fun as it is and nice as it is to see some, you know, performances, like we get to see Gaston Saro put in 90 minutes of work. Zach Steffen gets a, you know, kind of quiet clean sheet. But I've still got some question marks for this team right now. I think we've got to learn a lot about them over this, you know, final stretch.
So I would respectfully argue, Bart, that Zach Steffen had a quiet clean sheet. I think he had a couple clutch saves there towards the end.
Yeah, he did.
It was, you know, he was very, very good.
He also had six blocks.
That is very true.
You know, guys in front of him.
But, you know, let's cycle back to the big guy, Gaston Saro, making, I believe, his first full 90. I'm not too sure if anybody can correct me on that, but I believe that was his first full 90 since the coming back from the injury. And I thought the big guy was fantastic. He was an enforcer. He was all over the pitch, actually even trying to get up into the attacking area a few times, and unfortunately lost possession for Crew SC. But I thought Gaston looked great. He was, you know, not shying away from any physical tackles. I'd like to think that, you know, if I was in his same position, maybe I would guard my knee a little bit with some extra care. But, you know, the big guy, a lot of reckless abandon. They're very excited to see what I'm – very excited in what I'm seeing from Gaston Saro.
Well, and I think that the defense overall this season, not just in this game but all season long, has really been a lifesaver for us. You know, in previous seasons we would have kind of high-scoring games or at least get, you know, one goal and we'd have to really work for it. And then another team would just kind of march down there on a counterattack, you know, 3v2 and easily go around the keeper or something and get, you know, a simple goal off of a defensive error. We have really kind of shored up that back line, really shored up that defensive midfield. And even with these kind of rotation guys coming in, you know, guys who are not starting every week coming in and filling in, you don't really see a big drop off. So that's something that is a credit to Greg Berhalter and the system that he's kind of built these guys into, and the way he's been able to retain these pieces and kind of build that back line up over the last couple years. So that's kind of the saving grace of all of the offensive problems that we've had. Not necessarily problems, but kind of this hot and cold streak that we're seeing from a lot of these guys. We're getting it done, but it's just by kind of a razor's edge. And that razor's edge definitely would be tilting the other way if we still had the defensive problems that we had, say, 2 years ago. So potentially something that we can really build on. Berhalter teams typically kind of kick into a high gear maybe a month from now, something like that. So if that happens again this year, look out. I mean, this team could go far.
I think, you know, one of the counters is you look at the front three that, or rather the front four, but notably Frederico Higuain back in the lineup after some time off. Mike Grella getting, I believe it might have been one of his, I don't know that he's had another start. He might have had another start, but he hasn't seen, most of the time he's seen this season has been coming off the bench. And then, of course, Pedro Santos. And, you know, it might be an old kind of, you know, storyline or whatever, cliche. But I think you saw a player that, you know, he put in one of his better performances again, I think, of the season. You see the almost goal he had, probably the best chance Columbus had prior to Giassi Zardes' actual goal, when he put it off the post from, you know, just outside the box. It looked like he looked involved, and I believe he led the way for Columbus, or he had two shots on target, four total shots. He's taken corners, and he seems to be, you know, a little bit motivated. Maybe it's because you know, Justin's here and there's seems to be, you know, more pressure. Maybe it was just the fact that Frederico Higuain is back in the lineup and, you know, opened up and provided him more opportunities. But, you know, what did you see is also, you know, looking at with Justin Miram is coming in there at that 60-minute mark, getting 30 minutes with them together. You know, what did you see about that group together? How do you think they gelled?
I thought, you know, like you said with Pedro, it's very much the – I thought it was great. I actually thought he did very well, which is coming from me this season, I think, a huge compliment, because I haven't really been tremendously a huge fan of him. You know, the record DP coming in and kind of putting only one goal up and, you know, now a first full – complete season now, if we think about it, at least from a calendar year perspective. But, you know, he does draw a lot of fouls. He does a lot of great things. But I feel like with Miram coming back particularly, and, you know, you've got Mike Grella, who knows what's going on with Christian Martinez. Nico Hansen's playing very well, too, when he gets opportunities. A lot of these young kids are doing a really good job. But I feel like Pedro's kind of starting to feel the heat a little bit, turn up on the seat a little bit, that, you know, he's got to start performing or he's going to find himself on the bench. And, you know, coming after a few weeks of being replaced by a third-round draft pick in Luis Argudo, which no disrespect to Luis Argudo. He's playing very well for being a young kid and a third-round pick, no less. He's playing exceptionally well. You know, you're starting to see more wingers, more youth get injected into this lineup. Eddie Opoku comes back in the lineup again after debuting against Orlando City in MLS. You know, Argudo was not in the game day 18, but he was in the tunnel prior to the start of the game watching warm-ups. But, you know, you see all these guys come together. And, you know, I want to talk about for a second, Patrick wrote a great piece about it. He's not here to talk about it tonight, but a little bit about how Justin kind of picked right up right where he left off. You know, he looked really good. For those that weren't in the stadium on Saturday night, the ovation that Miram received when he got back on the pitch was probably one of the loudest ovations I think I've heard in that stadium for a very, very long time.
Deafening is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, it was deafening. And, you know, I had goosebumps. I'm getting goosebumps talking about it again. But, you know, from the second he came on, you know, you could tell kind of at the human level he was not necessarily overwhelmed, but it was a very cool moment for him. And the second he got on the ball, everybody cheered. And everybody was like, all right, we're back. We're ready to rock and roll here. And Justin got a lot of high praise from Greg Berhalter today, saying that, you know, Berhalter said that you could see that attack and that danger right back in the system. And it was almost like Justin never left. Everybody forgot Justin was gone for 6 months. And that was really, really cool to see. And even the celebration, look no further than Giassi's game winner. Justin's right in there as if he's never left, and he was bonded perfectly with everybody. But, you know, the cohesiveness between Justin, Higuain, Santos, Artur, Zardes, heck, throw Mullins in there too. I thought this was a good attacking group in the later half of the game, which is what you need from a super sub of sorts. I don't want to put Miram as a super sub because I think he's very, very capable of starting. But, you know, this was great attacking cohesiveness that was severely, severely deficient in the first half of the game.
Absolutely. It was terrific to see Justin Miram in there. And it was fun. I got to, you know, a lot of folks might have, and if you're on social media or if you're there at the tailgate, you saw ahead of time Justin Miram's family all down in tailgating from Michigan. And I mean, to see them in there, to see how excited they were, I got to talk with them a little bit. It was turns out the day that the trade went through was Justin Miram's mother's birthday. And that Justin got to call her and let her know, and she said it was one of the best birthday presents that she'd ever received. And, you know, to see the, you know, the entire family, and it I think, you know, kind of almost brings to the point again why we've got to save this damn team.
Hey, Bart, I have a question for you real quick. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Maybe you know this because I wasn't out for the tailgate. Is it true? Can you confirm or deny that Justin's family actually helped with the Lion of Mesopotamia?
Yep, returns.
Okay.
That is correct, yeah. They helped, you know, paint the TIFO, if you saw it, the huge Lion King kind of homage that was out last year we put out, but then they added returns to it, and that was Justin's family helping with that. It's a cool thing to see. You see that from time to time, obviously, with Will's parents, and then, of course, a friend of the show, Karen Crenali, and the entire Crenali clan. But to see them all drive down, and after everything that they've been through, that he's been through, to see them back here, it was a pretty fun thing. You know, we're all kind of cynical fans and stuff, and you know, real objective reporters like you and Ralph, or you and Patrick rather. But it's fun to see, and to obviously see them get a win, that's even better.
I couldn't get to the unmute button fast enough. I think you summarized it beautifully. Yeah, that's something we didn't have to deal with last week. You know, I think you summarized it brilliantly. And you could tell that his family really enjoyed being there. And after the game was a real special moment. And I know not a lot of folks had the opportunity to see it. But, you know, to be on field level, Justin was embraced by the fans. I know a lot of the supporters, particularly over by the Capo stands in the Nordic, presented Justin with gifts I think scarves, stuff like that. Justin came over and whipped his jersey right at a fan, and it was great because, you know, he's home. And there was a lot of his post-game comments were sublime, I think. You know, it just I can't think of enough good adjectives to describe how special that moment was for him. And, you know, I still stick to my tinfoil theory, and I'm getting with Alex on this one. I don't think Justin comes back if the prospect of the team relocating is still as serious as it was when he initially left. And I know it might be a far-fetched idea, but, you know, I know Justin's really happy to be home. I know he gelled really well, you know, with several of the players on the team. He's got great friendships with those guys. And I think that helps with the adjustment period as well. But, yeah, it was a beautiful thing. And to see him embrace his family, like you said, Bart, that the culmination of all these special moments for him, for his mother, you know, to see him embrace his family after the game, I don't know who he walked back to the locker room with, but I think he grabbed his cousin, or it might have been maybe a little brother or something like that, and kind of triumphantly rushed back to the locker room at the end of the game to go celebrate. So that was a really cool and a really special moment.
On the other hand, you look at, you know, some of the other guys, Eddie Opoku, not too much time, but, you know, did have the one nice play where he you know, chased down and had some good runs down the line, brought a lot of energy. You talk about that super sub role, Ralph, maybe not quite a super sub, but a great change of pace for Columbus to have now, kind of, you know, that young guy who can run and run that you haven't maybe seen in that wide position. Nico Hansen, not really a guy that, you know, is there that's going to just wear you down with his speed. Likewise for Argudo and the rest of them. So to add that just other element that we haven't seen on the wing for a while, dare I say, since Ethan Finley.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Can I go real quick, Sam? Sorry.
Oh, fine.
Sorry. So with Eddie, I had the privilege to talk to him about a week or so ago, and you could tell the guy absolutely enjoys the love. He loves playing the game. Any chance that he gets on the field, he kind of treats it as if I don't want to over dramatize it, or, you know, over drama. I don't know, whatever the word is I'm looking for. But, you know, he kind of treats it that, you know, this might be the last chance he ever gets on the field for this kid. I mean, it's not really a guarantee necessarily, but him coming on the pitch on Saturday night when he did that little spin-a-room move and kind of, you know, was dancing along the end line, that was a beautiful thing. And, you know, fans love him. He loves Columbus too. I mean, it's easy to marry these two concepts when player loves city and city loves player. Go ahead, Sam. I apologize.
That's okay. I was going to go back to the whole thing about Justin Merrim, and I was thinking yesterday, or as we were watching the game, especially there was a moment, there was about like 3 or 4 minutes where Houston was really, really pressing hard, and Justin Merrim sprinted back and made a tackle and got the ball back and went the other direction. And I'm like, you know what's really, really underestimated in the whole thing is Justin Merrim's effect on defense and how much his defensive play really contributes to how this team overall plays defensively. So that was obviously one thing I'm really happy for. But also just, you know, how he came back. Did you notice he didn't take on many people, if any, and he tried to find his teammates. So maybe that time of going away, I don't want to say gave him a little bit more maturity, but maybe helped him think a little differently. Instead of trying to take on 2-3 defenders at a time, he's now looking maybe more for a pass when otherwise he would have tried to take on the defenders. So I'll be interested to see how that translates. But I feel that he was definitely psyched to be back. He was waving to fans as he was heading to the bench before the game, and they were all like cheering for him, and it's just, you could tell that he was focused, he was excited, he was kind of like ready to start this new chapter.
Well, touching on Opoku and really kind of all of our midfield talent that we have now, especially when you add when you add Miram to the mix, we have so many different options that we can throw into the midfield, so many different looks that we can present to opposing teams, that I really think it's kind of a guessing game. I mean, you don't know who is going to be in what spot any given week. And assuming everybody stays healthy as we kind of get towards the playoffs, we'll be able to kind of tailor that look based on the individual team that we're facing. And especially, you know, having Mullins as an option in addition to Zardes, you could have a lot of different looks for this team. And I think in previous years, one of the main problems and gripes that people like me had with this team was you pretty much could pick the 11 every single week, and you knew exactly who was going to be out there. You knew exactly what the shape was going to be, and you could, you know, plan for the exact look of Crew SC every single week. I have no idea what the starting 11 is going to look like against Atlanta. I have no clue. It could be any one of a half dozen things at this point. And that's a tremendous asset for this team. So really good pickup. And it's really good that Greg is also kind of integrating all these guys into the system. We're getting looks at all these different guys. It'll be interesting to see if when Martinez comes back, if he's kind of put back into things or if he's, you know, bottom of the list at this point. But overall, tons of talent, tons of different kind of options that we have. And hopefully we'll get to see some more results from this. It's been a good streak for the Crew in a lot of ways the last couple months, but definitely a lot of close decisions, but hopefully we can keep it rolling.
And while hopefully the Crew will be able to keep it rolling on the field, obviously there have also been some developments, maybe some, dare I say, momentum brewing for the Crew off the field in this, you know, ongoing saga that is Save the Crew and the efforts from Anthony Precourt Sports Ventures, aided and abetted by Don Garber and Major League Soccer, to relocate the Crew to Austin, Texas. Fortunately, a really good thing it seems that Save the Crew has going for them is those efforts to relocate the team are being led by Anthony Precourt and Precourt Sports Ventures and Don Garber in Major League Soccer, because they have been sticking their foot in their proverbial mouth, it seems like. So they were hoping, Colin, last week to get a vote to agree to a term sheet. It seemed like that there were a lot of... We actually had planned to have you on earlier or potentially last week, but we wanted to wait so we could have you deliver insight into the decision that they made when they were slated to make last Thursday night. But Major League Soccer has punted it, and can you take us, you know, down there a little bit, or back to that Thursday night? What went wrong for Don Garber, for Anthony Precourt? Did this really go wrong, or is there still, you know, lots of potential for this to get going? And what should fans expect? What sort of resolution on that front? And then we'll get into the legal battle back in Columbus.
Sure. I think I'm going to back up just one tick to Wednesday, actually, when, you know, everyone remembers Wednesday night, sort of, it seemed like in response to this new set of amendments that a group of Austin City Council members led by Leslie Poole released, which did such things as, you know, it essentially doubled the rent initially that Precourt would pay and raised it every year by 2%. It also added an equal amount in a kind of fake property tax, I think is the best word for it. So, you know, you've got this $1 million rent to start out, you've got this $1 million property tax. So right off the bat, they were asking Precourt to pony up $2 million a year when he wasn't even expecting to pay $500,000 for the land until the sixth year of the lease. Mm-hmm. So then in response to that, on Wednesday, Precourt and the Austin City Manager released a pretty astonishing new term sheet that they agreed to, where Precourt and the City Manager changed some language. You know, they changed good faith to best efforts, which, you know, there is technically a difference, but it doesn't mean a lot. They still didn't talk about the amount of money they would give to a train station. they took off public use of the land. It really was kind of a step backward. You know, they took a lot off the table for Austin. So this came out Wednesday night at like 9 o'clock.
When all than, news that you really want to get out there comes out, you know.
Exactly. You know, this is, I mean, this is less than 24 hours before this board meeting held. Sorry, my dog is squeaking his toy. and, you know, not surprisingly, the Austin City Council members were frustrated that to have to go through this, you know, brand new term sheet that many of them hadn't had a chance to read yet right before the meeting and during the meeting. In response to that, we had this kind of intense meeting on Wednesday where, sorry, on Thursday, where the Austin City Council.
This is adorable, by the way. I just want to say that. I just want to go ahead and say
that. I got it. So he's taken care of. The Austin City Council on Thursday, you know, really pushed back hard about the timeline. And then that's when Richard Suttle, the expert lobbyist who is supposed to have all of this in-depth information about Austin property, you know, really put his foot in his mouth. One of the things I'm sure a lot of Crew fans have seen is that they included in, you know, in one of their huge parts of their community benefits package, they listed the academy, which is mandated by MLS. You know, it's going to help a lot of young boys, but it's going to help a lot of young boys, and that doesn't really affect girls. In Austin, there was a pushback, not necessarily on the fact that, you know, they were including something that was required, but that it wasn't going to help female players. In response to that, someone from, I think, Lone Star Academy, I think that's the team, or Lone Star Soccer Club, came to say, we've reached an agreement with PSV. They wouldn't say how much it was. PSV wouldn't say how much it was. And then Suttle took his turn to talk and said, you know what, actually, scratch all of this. We're taking this community benefit off. Doesn't count anymore.
We blundered.
Yeah, we blundered was the exact language he used afterwards. So, you know, following that, Mayor Ald Adler attempted to push a vote through in the evening, but I think most of the city council members weren't thrilled about that, even the ones that were and are a little more on board with the whole PSV project.
Maybe because they haven't received $10,000 of campaign contributions from him in the last, you know, calendar year or whatever.
I think that's a valuable point. And I think if I were running against Mayor Adler in the next election, that's something I would absolutely, you know, play his communication saying, you know, if we could have a vote on this right now alongside of, you know, one of those like sheets that someone's tweeted with how much he's received in donations. A bunch more amendments, you know, I don't think we've seen all of those yet, were put out. And then a vote was promised, I think, before 11:30 a.m. Central Time on Wednesday. That exact timing isn't clear to me. I don't know if you guys have more info on what exactly is going to happen there or when, but according to the mayor, a vote has to happen before 11:30. You know, Suttle then claimed that he had to get an extension for this, and he's going to have to ask MLS for another extension, but I think everyone knows that that's more or less nonsense.
I think there were a couple, you know, things that really stuck out for me, specifically from Richard Suttle, but also from PSV. How almost, because it's not as if the issues with the academy, obviously they went in and approached Lone Star, but how dismissive they were almost about, you know, the issues that these council members were raising. Council members like Kathy Tovo, who's been, you know, one of the biggest cheerleaders for this, the pro tem, or mayor pro tem, but who are suddenly now, I feel like, in the, you know, now you've really got to get me to yes, because you're here being dismissive of a very valid point. Hey, if we're going to, especially if you are, because I wouldn't necessarily expect an Austin council member to know that the academy was league mandated. I mean, I think that's just, you know, part of the goofy, you know, the shady accounting that Precourt has been doing this entire time to try to account something like that as a league benefit. They got caught, but then they to just be as kind of dismissive as they were about the valid concerns that, you know, why aren't you putting in anything for programming and training for girls when you're going to put this money towards boys? That's a no-brainer. It would have been really easy for them to approach Lone Star or any of those other academies prior to that. It seems like it came together pretty quickly, and, you know, again, they weren't willing to speak about any of those terms, so you can draw whatever conclusions you'd like about those. But then also, one of the very interesting tidbits that came from Richard Suttle was his admission that the lawsuit in Columbus would have no effect on what's going on whether, you know, they can move this team to Austin or anything, when that is one of the, you know, material arguments for them in their claimed motion to dismiss, is that, you know, this lawsuit is causing harm and preventing them from exercising their constitutional right to relocate this team.
Well, the whole performance by Suttle was amazing. If you're
they are paying that man.
Yeah, yeah. If you're a Save the Crew fan and you were watching that, I mean, it was better than you could have possibly imagined. It was, I mean, I remember going into this meeting, I was talking to a friend, and I was saying, I'm pretty sure they've got the votes. If they kick this thing down the road, you know, even on some sort of procedural thing, I'll be thrilled. But I totally think this is going to get done today. They've got this in the bag. I don't think it impacts us, but they've got this in the bag. Mm-hmm. It was such a poor performance from Suttle, that in such an unprofessional performance from him, that even if I was a pro MLS city council member, it would really give me pause. Like, this is the guy you picked. Mm-hmm. This is how prepared he was for this, you know, make or break meeting. And he just kind of winged it. And he got halfway through the thing and then changed his mind on stuff. You had other council members bringing up legitimate criticisms, and Suttle literally said, well, you're not going to vote for it anyway, so I'm not going to answer that. And then you had other council members who were for the project saying, hang on a second, this is, you know, Austin City Council, you need to show some respect here. This is not okay to just be this dismissive about everything. And so there were a bunch of new amendments that were kind of put forward. The mayor and Suttle kind of implied that some of these amendments were poison pills, things that you could pass a vote on, and then you could still vote yes on letting them negotiate. But then PSV would have to pull out of negotiations on the basis that it wouldn't work for them, which honestly, a poison pill is probably the most politically expedient way to end this for a lot of these council members. But a lot of these are completely legitimate. And so they went into this whole process with good intentions, and PSV has kind of tried to muddy the waters as much as humanly possible. They wanted pretty straightforward information and didn't provide it. And so now they have another vote coming up this week that they're going to have to try to figure out if that can happen. They're saying that there's going to be a vote before 11:30. If that happens, I would be a little bit surprised. I would not be surprised if they kicked this can down the road even further and said, you know, come back to us in a month with XYZ. If that happens, I think pre-court may be finished in Austin. If he gets the votes through, I still think his position is really kind of precarious. The city would then be able to negotiate a deal. My understanding is that then Austin City would Council would have to basically sign off on that deal a final time. And he's burned a lot of bridges already. And this is one of the things that, you know, if you talk to people who are connected to pre-court sports ventures here in Columbus, a lot of the time you'll hear the same thing is, you know, they burned bridges. They did not treat people with respect. They did not treat people as business partners. They treated them as almost subservient to this, you know, organization and to this, you know, Major League Soccer apparatus that they have in around the country. And they walked around acting like they were the New York Yankees, and they were, you know, not. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens this week, just in the next couple of days here. But yeah, a huge blunder from Richard Suttle and from Anthony Precourt, and kind of an unforced error that has once again delayed proceedings and honestly has probably made a lot of people within MLS very concerned about the level of professionalism within that organization.
Suttle and Backus said something during the meeting last week that really rubbed me the wrong way. And that was the discussion of Lone Star Soccer Club. And Backus, who was another gentleman that talked during the Austin City Council meeting, said and talked very condescendingly to City Council, saying that going back to the community benefits of the Developmental Academy and the WPSL, and saying that he's been doing this 25 years and it was confusing to him. Well, basically what he was saying was that PSV and Lone Star Soccer Club, which is the WPSL team, for those that are unfamiliar, the WPSL is the Women's Premier Soccer League, which is what your Columbus Eagles play in. And that they were saying that they agreed to have Precourt fund the team through scholarships, travel fees, equipment, and said that decades was the word that was used in the argument, or the agreement, rather. And, you know, the funny part to that is that that narrative was destroyed in seconds when Suttle said that, you know, let's scratch the community benefit, let's do all this. You know, that agreement that was supposed to be, you know, decades covered was just scratched in seconds. And I don't know if anybody has the quote exactly, but I believe it was in reference to the women's benefits. But didn't Suttle say something to the effect of, quote, that was something that we overlooked?
Yeah, I mean, he basically said that they didn't think about it, and he thanked the council for bringing it up because they didn't think about it.
Actually, it was what's even worse is that it was about the academy, mm-hmm. and that they had listed the academy as a benefit, but mm-hmm. the academy is actually MLS required. Mm-hmm. So that's what he said, that they blundered, is that they listed the academy as a community benefit. But instead, the academy is an MLS requirement. Therefore, they had to do it anyway.
The thing that pissed me off, though, was that Precourt was trying to make the promise of an NWSL team in Austin and saying that he was looking to eventually bring an NWSL team in Austin. And having the connections that I've had with the Red Stars and the levels that I've had in Division II soccer on the women's side is... Sam, can I swear? Do I have clearance to do that? He's not telling me anything. So I'm going to be honest.
I was nodding, but you weren't looking.
Oh, it's bullshit. It really is bullshit, because the buy-in for an NWSL franchise is $30 million at last check that I've had there. And last check, too, is U.S. Soccer has to sign off on, because U.S. Soccer, no secret, uses the NWSL as kind of a training academy of sorts for the women's teams to play. Granted, it is still a professional league, but they use it so that their international players can stay fit throughout the course of the year. And U.S. Soccer wants to basically talk about wants to dictate what's going on in the NWSL season. So expansion in the NWSL, and also, too, they're not actively looking for expansion teams. So that's a line of crap. And, you know, as somebody that works in Division II soccer, you know, there are teams in Central Ohio that are working very diligently and very hard to get to that next level, and have been told that it's difficult to get there. So the fact that Precourt's coming through and telling the city of Austin and virtually guaranteeing that he's exploring the possibility of trying to bring an NWSL team to Austin when the Houston Dash are just a mere 2 to 3 hours away from the city of Austin, they're not going to oversaturate the market there in a league that has 8 teams. They're not going to put 2 in the state of Texas.
Well, but I think the key to remember with that statement, and I saw it too, and I think he's trying to trick the city of Austin in a lot of ways. He's not saying that he's going to do that. He's simply floating the idea, which is an idea that he floated, you know, a year before he made the announcement to move to Austin, to the Massive Report, to me. I asked him directly about the possibility of bringing women's soccer to Columbus, and, you know, mm-hmm. he was intrigued by the idea. So I think all of this, when you kind of break it down, it's kind of trying to put lipstick on a pig a little bit. You know, they've got themselves in a heck of a bind. You know, they've built this whole community benefits package on the benefits from the academy. They're now taking that off the table, supposedly. that leaves around $20 million in community benefits over 20 years for $300 million in taxes that he's basically not going to have to pay. So when you look at everything in comparison, $300 million is probably unfair because that was over 60 years. We're talking over 20. A significant amount of money in taxes that are being saved by not doing this, and you're only getting $1 million in return for that per year. So it's a really tough deal for them to get through. I don't think there's basically any economic argument for it at this point. I think you kind of have to go with what Mayor Adler described, which was that soccer has benefits beyond just the economics, and don't look at the economics about this. As he says, while having received over $10,000 in campaign contributions from people with links to this whole deal. But when you put that aside, you know, that's basically what they're hanging their hat on, that, hey, it would be really cool to have a professional soccer team here. So why don't you just give us this, you know, $100 million benefit for free and, you know, don't worry about the rest of it. And, you know, maybe you can ride on the bike trails sometimes. We won't tell you when, but you'll be able to use those green spaces sometime. Oh, and we've also put a single acre there for affordable housing, because you can fit a heck of a lot of affordable housing on a single acre. So you have fun with that, too. The whole plan is just it's fantasy. And some of the city council members are starting to kind of poke holes in it. There were actually some questions that were released by city council member Alter earlier today. Those are going to poke a lot of holes in it, I think. Maybe more holes than PSV is comfortable having poked in it. But yeah, it's going to be a very interesting couple of days. So buckle up.
Don't you love how Adler's sitting there talking about, you know, soccer does more than economic impacts and like bringing people together, and then there were actual reports of fights and like verbal altercations in council chambers last week?
I really don't know what is going on with the mayor. I mean, I think he's so far into this at this point that it becomes kind of like a sunk cost situation for him.
Well, yeah, he's gotten $10,000 into it.
Yeah, but well, even beyond that, he's he has done things during this process, even beyond the money, that are weird, to say the least.
He's got people running against him on it now. An issue. It's become a wedge issue politically.
Yeah. And it's really kind of not a standard operating procedure, the way that this whole process has gone about. The procedures that PSV has been allowed to kind of navigate through are very different from the procedures that any other major sort of real estate deal has to go through. And they've got to skip a lot of steps, and they've got to skip a lot of oversight, and it's just been kind of pushed through. I'm sure that Anthony Precourt hopes that that will continue. I am not so sure that it will at this point. I thought that the fact that they kicked it to Wednesday and that so many of these city council members had legitimate criticisms about it is something that Anthony Precourt should be very, very concerned about. He is going to have to make the argument to a lot of people that the traffic situation is going to be resolved, which it's not resolved in the current plan. He's going to have to get this gender equality issue sorted out. If they take the academy out of the equation entirely, they're going to have to figure out where other community benefits are going to come from. The whole thing is just a mess. And he's going to have something to reveal on Wednesday that is of, you know, serious substance. Otherwise, I think this thing is going to go down in flames. I'm sure they're going to have some minor concessions to make at the very least. I still think in the end this will probably pass, but if you would have asked me a week ago what the odds are of it failing, I would have said maybe 10%. You know, I bump it up to maybe 30 now. I think that there's a not insignificant chance that enough people vote against this thing that they kick it far enough down the road that Precourt has to pull out. And if that happens, that would be hugely embarrassing, not only for Anthony Precourt, but also for Major League Soccer, considering the amount of egg on their face that they've gotten through this whole process.
I think a sticking point for Precourt is that he's acting like he's selling a piece of property, which is the O2, the city of Austin, instead of essentially buying a piece of land to put his soccer stadium on. And that's where everything has kind of been mucked up in the Austin City Council. They're all expecting, you know, we have this $30 million right now piece of land that when you add property taxes on for years and years is going to be worth millions, tens of millions more than that. And he wants it for free with no property taxes, with small rent. He's going to let you use it, but occasionally they want, you know, in a community benefits package, they want something that's a lot bigger than, you know, we'll have an academy somewhere and I guess we'll have a park. You know, they want high school football to be on that field. They want people to be able to host an event there. They want to be able to have a park on that field. And, you know, that's a huge sticking point. Now he's kind of pushing this business mentality into the government sphere where, you know, they don't want to and don't have to play ball. That said, I still think there's a pretty significant chance of everything passing on Wednesday. But, you know, it's right now it's Monday, 7:20 almost central time. We haven't seen a new term sheet. I would imagine they would negotiate yet another term sheet. And the fact that it hasn't come out by now has to be relatively concerning. You know, if they leave the same term sheet that they had in the past, it's not great. If they release another one, you know, at the 11th hour tomorrow evening, that's going to look even worse. And, you know, you have all of these amendments. And even, you know, if and when it does pass Wednesday, it's going to have to be voted on again. They're going to have to, one, reach an agreement, and two, it's going to have to be voted on. And if it doesn't include a train station, if there's no nothing that makes up for the lost amount of taxes that's there, you know, if there's nothing that addresses this kind of lingering issue with the Austin water utility that's, you know, kind of floating around, then it's, you know, we're still in for another 2 months of fighting before their October deadline.
And that's one of the interesting points, you know, it's their October deadline, but that goalpost has been moved. Those deadlines have been moved a number of different times. And then you just think about, you know, the logistics of, by the way, Save the Crew recruited again, and you know, not to directly compare, you know, them and stuff, but Save the Crew's has 10,500 plus, basically really strong leads for season tickets next year. Some of them, obviously, people who already own season tickets, but I digress. Then you look at what's going on in Austin, and rather not going on. There's no way. How are they going to be able to prepare to play next season? They don't have a spot to play in, and yet at least there's nothing that's been publicly announced, any sort of agreement for a site to play. And then I think it also comes down to, and it appears, and to some of the points I think Alex that Councilwoman Alter brings up, or I think is trying to bring up, I just don't think that Precourt and Precourt Sports Ventures has the money to pony up to provide the level of benefit that Austin taxpayers and council members, that again you're dealing with, deal with the reality of an election year, are willing to, you know, to forfeit. When you've got other developers that are very interested in paying very real property taxes and putting a lot of money down right into the taxpayers' coffers to purchase the land outright.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of want to circle back to something that Richard Suttle said. You know, he said someone asked him what impact the lawsuit in Columbus would have on things down in Austin, and he basically said that it would have no impact whatsoever and not to worry about it, things like that, which not only undermines the legal argument that PSV is trying to make in Columbus right now and that MLS is trying to make in Columbus right now. And, you know, I wouldn't want to speak to that. I mean, Colin would be much more equipped to speak to the specifics on that. But the fact that he made that statement kind of stuck out to me. And it almost made me think that maybe they're not even planning on playing in 2019. Maybe the goal secretly with PSV and Richard Suttle just did a bad job of keeping it secret is that they do plan on just selling the Crew to a local ownership group who will keep the team running in 2019. and then they can just throw some, you know, team in whenever they get an actual stadium built, you know, maybe kick it down the road a year or two while they, you know, figure out everything here in Austin and you know, take an expansion franchise and go that route. That certainly makes the most sense to me, given the timeline that they're working with. You would only have a couple months to find a spot. There's basically only two spots that you could go with. You could go with Texas, the University of Texas, who have said that their spot is basically off the table. Or you could go with Circuit of the Americas, which is the USL franchise. And Epstein and Precourt do not get along, so I don't see that happening either. You could, in theory, play, I think there's like a baseball diamond or something that you could use at potentially, but it would be very difficult for them. And so I think if we see this thing pass, it would not surprise me if they just say straight up that this is probably going to be an expansion franchise. We're in discussions in Columbus with an owner or owners who seek to purchase the team. And if we sell to them, then we will, you know, start this franchise in 2019 or 2020 rather, and the Crew will continue in 2019. That would certainly make the most sense to me. And one of Councilmember Alter's questions basically kind of hints at that. You know, that she says in the question, I think it's number. Let me see. I think it's number 10, or let me try to find it.
I think 14.
Oh, it's 11. Yeah. Does anything 11, in this agreement indicate the MLS team has to be the Columbus Crew? Were MLS to grant the rights, would the agreement also allow them to start a team from scratch? That seems to be the way everything is worded as of now. There's kind of a lot of mentions of a stadium co, which is a, you know, a company that's like a shell company for the stadium. And there's a lot of mentions of the club, and what the club is left completely kind of not described. My guess is that club is going to be an expansion club. And that's why Suttle basically said, oh, don't worry about that, because if we get a deal here, we're just going to sell the Crew and settle that lawsuit. But we'll have to wait and see.
But even to that, you know, again, if you're MLS and trying to, you know, have the leverage in negotiations, at least, you know, continue to use, I think the whole thing they sort of wanted and envisioned through all of this, as much as I think they were committed to Austin, they MLS and PSV, as evidenced again by the clause being in there and all the lead up to all this. But I think they envision themselves in a bidding war with, you know, Columbus and Austin still, you know, bidding and trying to put together their own, you know, even better benefits back, you know, package and giving, you know, the primo pieces of land, the Butler Shores and whatnot, because they have this just incredible product here that, you know, everyone is dying for, MLS soccer. And suddenly, you know, not only is Suttle undermining their legal argument, but he's undermining their ability to exert as much potential money out of the supposed Columbus buyers, you know, whatever that consortium is. I mean, he is really, I mean, if I just, I return to it every time, and I don't understand how the rest of the owners in this league, who as far as we know, have the ability to just to collectively strong arm Anthony Precourt and even Don Garber into reaching some sort of resolution, have not done this yet, with what they've got on the line with this lawsuit and ORC 9.67, that we'll have Colin kind of catch us up to as well. But what's on the line there, with that lawsuit, if they were to lose, if they were to win, they're gravy. If they're to lose, they could be in a lot of trouble in professional sports. The way we see it across the, across America, could be, you know, shaping change radically, just with what the precedent would set, that would set. But you look at, you know, they're better off with the settlement. I can't imagine that the rest of these owners want to see this is for another guy like Anthony Precourt, who's not going to necessarily make them a lot of money. He doesn't have money like the rest of them. And he's going in an Austin market that, you know, has not done well. Maybe it wouldn't if they get a great stadium out of it. But for a while, they're going to be playing in a high school stadium or something like that for a little bit. They're not going to be just generating a whole bunch of revenue for the rest of these guys immediately.
And, you know, I think that's a really interesting point, Bart, that you make and that Alex makes, in that when Suttle says this lawsuit has no effect, he, you know, realistically is saying one of two things. He's saying, one, MLS is just going to cancel. You know, if they're losing, MLS will cancel the license. They'll essentially contract the crew, and they'll do something that is pretty nefarious and questionably legal. Or two, you know, if they do lose the lawsuit, or even, you know, if this stadium deal passes tomorrow or Wednesday, they are prepared to say, it's a expansion team, we're not going to be able to do it, we sold the crew, etc. And those are, in my opinion, you know, the only two realistic options. Otherwise, this is going to get tied up for a long time. You know, we've got the motion to dismiss hearing that was moved up to September 4th, I believe, oral arguments in that. And everything that the judge has released so far suggests to me that he's very unlikely to dismiss this before going to trial. So, you know, it's going to be protracted from that sense for a much longer time, unless MLS and SV and the city of Columbus are willing to some sort of settlement, which the judge also clearly wants to push, rather than having to rule on this case.
Well, and so if you look at the other questions that council member Alter kind of submitted for PSV to answer, a lot of them have to do with the amount of money that PSV has. A lot of them are kind of scenarios that may arise if Anthony Precourt runs out of money. A lot of them are questions surrounding his finances in general, PSV's finances in general. And, you know, keep in mind that they've been briefed, I believe, behind closed doors on some of the finances. So to kind of have more questions about that makes me kind of nervous about maybe what his finances look like. He may not be in a financial situation where he can simply take the team that he already has to Austin. He might need to sell the crew in order to raise the funds necessary to build the stadium. Even though he's going to be taking out these loans against the value of the land to kind of finance a lot of that. But he might need more than that. So there are kind of a lot of different elements in this, but I certainly think at this stage, it's in his best interest just to end this. And the quickest way to end it is just to settle. I mean, businesses settle lawsuits all the time when it's just so much hassle and it's not going to, you know, you're not going to get anything more out of it than what you want to get anyway. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't know if this will be before Wednesday. I kind of would be surprised, but a lot of twists and turns left in this. So if I were Precourt, I would certainly try to get this wrapped up before that vote. My guess is they don't have time at this stage to do that, but as soon after the vote as humanly possible, because you want to give assurances to those voters in Austin and you know, the council members and politicians and everybody that, you know, this is going to be okay. Put your trust in us, even though we've shown no reason to do so, and you can have a soccer team.
Yeah, I think the point that you raised on his finances is really big. The fact that he's refusing so far to pay what's estimated at $13 million for a train station is a really big deal. That's got to be comparative chunk change for most of these MLS owners. And if they can't get together some sort of relatively simple deal to pay $13 million, that's the cost of Toronto's salary for a year. I think Toronto's salary cap's even more than that for a year. And if he can't afford a $13 million train station, it's either his biggest negotiating ploy, and he's at some point going to say, oh, we're willing to pay for the train station if he has to, or he just can't do it.
And you know, meanwhile, there's the legal battle in Columbus, and, you know, we still have to get to the preview for this weekend, but I'm just calling it, to kind of catch us up a little bit. Last week, there was the toll getting extended, obviously, but the prospect of oral arguments, do you think that we're actually going to get there, and what do you think folks are going to see? And maybe we can obviously, you know, circle back when it's a little bit closer, but not too far away, only about 3 weeks or so.
Yeah, I'd still be surprised if we make oral arguments. There's a chance that they could, you know, they may want to just do oral arguments if they lose. If it's not dismissed, then pre-court says, okay, now we settle. But until then, I don't know how much new information is going to come out in those arguments, aside from whatever questions the judge might have, some rebuttals to the other, from one side to the other. I can guarantee you're going to hear a lot about subtle comments being mentioned that, there's no reason for this case to be dismissed. If one of their main arguments is that, they're prevented from exercising their right as a property owner to move their property, and subtle saying, well, this doesn't affect it at all. I think all the Columbus City Attorney has to say is, the plaintiff or the defendant has said that this doesn't affect it, so that should be moot. I don't think you can argue with that. I personally hope it doesn't get to that stage. I think if it doesn't make it that far, that's a good sign for keeping the team in the city. But we'll find out soon. It's not long. September is coming quickly.
It certainly is. But in the meantime, we've got Atlanta United coming up on the Crew docket, as they will take on the Eastern Conference leaders this weekend down on some beautiful turf in front of 70,000 or so screaming fans. Obviously, this Atlanta team, you've got Joseph Martinez, who's scoring at Stern John rates. They have been, one of if not the top team in MLS all season, and this is an area, 26 goals, yeah, for Joseph Martinez. A place down in Atlanta that, Crew of a little bit of history now already, just with the playoff. And it seems like for just being around now, this in their second season, it seems like we've seen a lot of Atlanta. These are two teams that are familiar with each other. And it's, again, another really big test for Columbus, a team that's been living on the margins, and Atlanta, a team that has, again, been as dominant as any team in MLS all season.
Yeah, it's a budding rivalry, right? I mean, this is getting kind of exciting. There's a lot of matches that are starting to happen that have a lot of big fight feels to them. But, yeah, like you mentioned, Joseph Martinez scoring at an ungodly rate. I remember, I think BWP, when he won the Golden Boot a couple years ago, 27 was a big deal. And, Martinez is about to smash that. And then, you look at, Almiron's wonderful. Ezekiel Barco, if he can stop getting involved with, his teammates' girlfriends, we've got a little European football drama there where he's, apparently macking on a couple of his, teammates, girlfriends, or something like that. But Tata Martino, I mean, it's a beautiful style of football that Tata's teaching down there. Grant Wall just tweeted there are 86,000 people in the stadium in anticipation of Sunday's game right now. So there's 86,000 people eagerly awaiting for the game. No, I'm just kidding, that's fake news. But if you look at Joseph Martinez, Barco, Almiron, Jeff Lorenowitz, which is a name that Crew SC fans really hate and has drawn a lot of ire, Michael Parkhurst, and then the reigning starting MLS All-Star goalkeeper, Brad Guzan, who I still cannot put that together on how he started the game over Zach Steffen.
Don Garber, that's
Don Garber. But anyway, yeah, you look into Atlanta and then Crew, likewise. I mean, Atlanta's playing lights out, and Crew SC are playing lights out, and Zach Steffen seems to be having, Atlanta, despite being the mecca of the Eastern Conference and what everybody dare I say, the gold standard of the Eastern Conference. You know, for some reason, Zach Steffen seems to get that ice water in his veins when he goes there. And, you know, he doesn't get fazed by that massive crowd, which is huge. And I think with how Crew SC have been playing recently, you know, I don't think this team goes into Atlanta and gets rattled that big, because, you know, Crew show that they can hang with the Five Stripes. You know, Atlanta's putting up 2 points per game right now, which is, again, just an incredible number. But, you know, it's going to be a fun one Sunday. I think it's going to be tight. I think it's going to be heavily contested. I think it's going to be, you know, for a national game that's not in Columbus, it's going to be a fun one to watch.
It certainly will be. And, yeah, you mentioned it, Ralph. Just two national games we get all season. And, oh, of course not, you know, in Columbus, but... I think obviously it's, you're going to have to, if Columbus wants to make noise in the playoffs, in the postseason, if Greg Berhalter and this team, and I think, again, I think it still, I guess, remains to be seen whether he's, you know, done assembling this team or whether he wants to, you know, add one more piece. I think there's still some time before the MLS transfer window comes to a close. But if you want to go and if you want to win an MLS Cup, which, you know, maybe it's not realistic, but I think it's something that should be your goal as a coach, you've got to beat Atlanta. You're going to have to go through Atlanta. And so, you know, it comes down to, I think Columbus, if you think this, you're serious about this team, that, you know, there aren't excuses. You're going to have to beat Atlanta. And so, you know, whether they've got the goal scoring, and obviously Joseph Martinez, again, is tearing it up, and he was dangerous when Columbus played him, too. Left unmarked just, you know, for a moment, and he's able to score a goal. But it's kind of, you know, put up or shut up time, and I think it's been interesting because you do see this Columbus team seemingly playing to the level of their competition, whether that's against Houston last weekend, or even though they played, you know, decently, not getting any chances, or then, you know, some of the big wins we've seen from this team all season, just sort of Jekyll and Hyde. But this is, I think, going to be, you know, one of their biggest tests, and a game, if they can keep this rolling, and if you get, you know, beat Atlanta and suddenly look, you've picked up 9 points in your past three games. You start other teams, they don't have quite as many games in line, and then you start feeling like, hey, there's some karma. We're finally, for the tough stretches that we've gone through, maybe we've gotten out of it. And with the addition of Justin Miram, you could see this team, you know, going on a nice little run. So it'll be interesting to see if that can kind of be that trajectory, or push them on that trajectory. And we'll get in and get the rest of you guys' thoughts, I think, on some picks to see if we think that this is a chance, or if this is, you know, Atlanta going to be an Atlanta team that flexes their muscle as one of the top teams in MLS. Does anybody want to jump in on picks first, or do we want to just, I can just run through the line?
I mean, I'll go, I guess. I think Atlanta's a very good team. I think this will be a really good test for our defense. I really want to see how our defense holds up. If there's any team in the league, I think, except for maybe the two Los Angeles teams, I think Atlanta is the team that's most likely going to cause us problems defensively. They have so much pace. They have so much kind of attacking talent. If we make one error, they're probably going to exploit it. So that'll be kind of the thing I'll be watching kind of closely, is how many goals do we concede against this Atlanta team? I think... offensively, we match up not terribly against this Atlanta team. So hopefully we can get a couple goals. But I wouldn't be surprised if we concede a couple as well. I think I'm going to go with, let's do 2-1 Crew. I think we're going to concede at least one. And hopefully we can still get the 3 points, though.
Okay, Alex Stanek, as always, and I appreciate that, sir, going with the win. Well, not always, but mostly another, you know, good shameless homers as you all should be.
We're the greatest team the world has ever seen. I mean, exactly. you have to pick the greatest team.
Every time. It's an easy choice. Always. And until Atlanta built too, not bought, which for all the success for Atlanta, I mean, look at how much they've spent more, you know, on Bracco or like Martinez or Almiron than the Crew have spent in just the sum of every single transfer that they've made in our 20 plus years. I digress, though. We'll head over to Ralph Schudel, your pick for the game.
Hey buddies,
I'm gonna
it's
go Master 1-1
Report podcast brought to you. Oh, just well, it's live, but now you're counting down.
That's
what are
all.
We doing?
This okay, is gonna be hold a on, really stop, good, stop,
this
stop.
This is gonna be a really good cold open.
There you go.
Stop. We'll probably put this in
Sam
at the
Fahmy
end.
Getting here next.
3.
So I am going to go 2-1 Atlanta.
Nice.
I unfortunately see that. I don't know. I'm just not seeing how they can beat Atlanta right now at Atlanta's form and at the way that they're scoring. I think their defense failed them last year, but I don't think their defense is failing them this year. This is a team that really kind of easily scored 2 on us at home. So, yeah, I'm going to go 2-1 Atlanta.
Bad fan.
Boo. Eh.
Doesn't happen often, but eventually I do call one against us, against the Crew.
Well, fortunately, we've got Colin here to contribute as well. Colin, you know, even as a guest, we're going to let you come in and get a pick, presuming that it is the right pick, though.
Atlanta's really good, and their fans, I think, are going to be really excited for this match, especially, you know, following up on last year's penalty kick victory by Crew SC. That said, I think there are going to be some nerves just because of the excitement. The Crew will go up early and then end up drawing 2-2.
Okay. I mean, better than the others, but, you know, that's it's going to be the Crew. Crew are going to win it, obviously. I'm going to go 3-1 because Harrison Offal, after that gorgeous assist last week, is finally going to get another goal. He does have the one already this season. And we're going to – I think Patrick Mullins is going to come on and, you know, get one as well. And then Josh Williams – no, Josh Williams is hurt. Who else we're going to go with? Pipa Higuain and Crew come away with 3 points in Atlanta. Any parting shots, folks?
Josh Williams is going to score even though he's hurt. Screw it.
I like it. Josh Williams.
There's pyro in Atlanta. We've established that. People get hurt by it. The smoke is going to come up in the 87th minute, and the NWO theme song for my wrestling fans is going to start playing, and out of the smoke is going to emerge Adam John, putting his finger over his mouth, shushing the crowd as he scores the game winning goal. And then he's going to spray paint NWO on Brad Guzan's lifeless body as he lays there after he's conceded the goal.
I would appreciate that. You know, I mean, that's Adam John for as much as we've probably, I mean, rightfully so, maybe ragged on him or just pointed out, you know, some factual things. He will always be a legend for that goal and that celebration, and I will give him that. You know, till the day that I stop sharing air with the rest of y'all on this earth, that goal and that the shh was incredible. And to be able to, you know, just have that level of arrogance, it's just something admirable. And oh, that was so awesome.
When we save the Crew, can we fly in Adam John back from loan just so he can Don Garber at the signing ceremony?
I want, yeah, that would just be, like, have him as, you know, kind of like a Frankie 2, you know, brand guy where he just goes around different places and shh, or get, yeah, like, a big, you know, big statue of that or something and put it, you know, up there next to Lamar Hunt and then just Adam John shh-ing.
Just standing next to our mysterious owner, just kind of doing the shh thing at Anthony Precourt and Don Garber at the other side of the table. Like, that's all I want. Just kind of like standing guard behind, you know, like a bodyguard. It'd be nice. Good times. I can't wait. Save the crew.
Dreams. Yeah, yeah. We will. Will, looking forward to that. And we can't wait. I can't wait for that episode when we can talk about that. And then we can just, you know, resume talking about just this team. But it is great to, you know, one of, I guess, the silver lining in all this is that we get to have great, thoughtful guests on, like Colin Johnson, to go and break down things and explain all this legal wrangling and whatnot. Colin, thank you so much for joining us this week. And, you know, for the rest of the gang, for Sam, for Ralph, and Alex, this is Bart saying we'll see you next week. Bye, buddies.